KCO, 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. At least seven people are in critical condition after a driver rammed a vehicle into a crowd waiting to get into a Los Angeles nightclub. 30 people were hurt, and police describe a chaotic scene. CBS's Elise Martinez with the latest.
Police say a man drove into the crowd, injuring dozens of people. They still don't know why, if this was intentional or not. Initial reports say he was kicked out of a nearby business, but police tell me that that is not confirmed. Police say bystanders dragged the driver out of the vehicle and attacked him after he plowed into the crowd.
A furious President Trump is suing the Wall Street Journal for $10 billion over an article linking him to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. But CBS's Willie James Inman reports the president is facing a firestorm.
Backlash within the MAGA movement has grown over the handling of the Epstein case, with some alleging the administration is still withholding key details.
I call it the Epstein hoax.
Some supporters of the president say they want to see more documents released.
Make some noise if you care about the Jeffrey Epstein scandal.
I think the DOJ should immediately move to unseal all the Epstein documents in the Southern District of New York.
Two wildfires in Arizona are being fanned by high winds and have already torched more than 90 square miles. Historic buildings, including the Grand Canyon's nearly century-old lodge, have been burned. KPHO-TV's Jack Perletsky with details.
The White Sage Fire is just under 60,000 acres, so that is much bigger of the two fires. That one's at 27% contained. Compare that to the Dragon Bravo fire that's burned just less than 12,000 acres on the north rim of the Grand Canyon. And today was the first time there's been any sort of containment. Fire crews say they've got about 2% of that fire contained.
Firefighters who responded to a deadly fire at an assisted living facility in Fall River, Massachusetts, say it was tough. 10 people were killed in the blaze, and Fire Lieutenant Paul Machado says first responders saw terrible things.
Almost every window had somebody in there screaming for help. And we switched to ground ladder rescue operations and started taking people out.
Searchers are still looking for victims after that deadly flooding in Texas.
I have been present for 5 or 6 body recoveries at this point. Actually, down there where the stage was wedged up between the tree, one of the first days, that's where I actually recovered our friend's dog, who is no longer with us.
At least 135 people were killed in the July 4th flooding, and many are still missing. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. An effort to restore northern pike habitat in Green Bay is also benefiting other wildlife species and raising local awareness about the effects of climate change. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
The primary goal of the multi-county collaboration was to create fish passage openings by building culverts and restoring wetlands to improve spawning habitat for the northern pike. Ken Delata with Oconto County says the project has since expanded to benefit a wider range of species. Delata says most types of Wisconsin wildlife depend on wetlands at some point in their lives, including northern pike.
They're very important for controlling bait fish population out there. It is a very sought-after fish, especially in the wintertime. Recreational-wise, it's a huge draw.
Delata says restoring these areas has given the researchers a unique opportunity to study the travel and reproductive patterns of northern pike. Their grant funding ends in 2027, but he says they hope to continue with these projects. Chuck Druckery with Marionette County says half of the remaining wetlands on Lake Michigan are on the west shore of Green Bay. So far, 82 projects have been completed there, opening up 200 stream miles and restoring nearly 20 acres of wetlands. Druckery says agriculture has replaced many wetlands with ditches that have become problems for pike and other species.
Because the ditches, they are deeper than the original streams were, so that even if the fish can swim up the ditch, sometimes they can't get out of the ditch.
He thinks their progress could become more challenging challenging given the threat of climate change and heavier rainfall, but the projects have also provided opportunities to raise awareness of these issues. They've made 2 acres of land into an outdoor classroom for hands-on teaching to students about the importance of wetlands and wildlife habitat. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy today, highs around 80 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, 56. Some sunshine for Sunday and highs in the upper 70s. Mostly sunny, upper 70s on your Monday. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday. Highs in the mid 80s, upper 80s Wednesday.
It's 79 degrees right now.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I welcome director-producer John Roach at Max Inc. Radio's Rocker joins me in studio for some Atwood Fest chat. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci.
And Jacob!
Educated educators talking education.
Not and Jacob, Jacob. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Saturday show, Civic Media listeners out there in your car, listening live on your app. Man, we are so glad you're with us today. And yes, of course, downloaders, we always appreciate you no matter what time and where you're downloading and where you're listening. I will just put out a word of advice. If you don't have a water-resistant phone, don't listen in the shower. I had to explain that. Luke's 25 now, but when he was in ninth grade, he thought that taking his cell phone in the shower for music was a good idea. About a month after that, he's like, "Dad, what's wrong with my phone?" And it didn't survive taking showers. So any Civic Media listeners, we know that's not you. Johnny, Jacob, Saturday, loving it. Johnny, what are you up to, my friend?
Hey, loving it, you know, enjoying summer as I can. You know, I'm on that wind down, get ready to get back to school. I'm about a month out, just under until I'm back, you know, in my classroom. So starting to think about it a little bit more, you know, transition from my off season to the beginning of, you know, what I'll call the preseason, mid-August, back to the classrooms. But pretty excited about that. So full summer mode here, you know, just taking it in, getting ready for that. Ease back into the school year.
Nice. Glad to know you're easing back into it. Producer Jacob, what's going on for you on this wonderful Saturday?
I'm very excited to be here on a Saturday. You know, I love Saturdays so much, Tim and Johnny. And I'm not a teacher. I haven't been in a classroom for over a year, and I'm still getting anxiety from walking in the store and seeing those signs that say back to school. I'm okay. I don't need it. I need, you know, let's keep the summer going a bit.
We had that, you know, we did the whole episode on back to school. Is it too soon? What in the world is the commercial world coming to? It made us though think we did a little bit of a reflection during that moment too, about saying, you know, who would be kind of working with us on this, going like, don't let the anxiety creep in. Don't let that. Let's regulate. Well, you know, we're talking about our friends at Educators Amplified. Yeah, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. But today, yeah, we have one of them today. It's Teacher Joanna for now, or as we should say to the Busted Pencils listeners, you have known her so long as Teacher Joanna. But Johnny and I had a meeting, and we made a decision that Teacher Joanna, no longer. We just can't do it any longer because, well, because she's now Johnny Dr. Joanna right there. Yes, she's still a teacher, but Dr. Joanna, congratulations. Welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you, our friend?
I am well. Thank you. I'm so excited about my added title, let's say, because I'm always a teacher. I'm still a teacher. I'm always a teacher. But yes, I did complete my doctorate degree.
Johnny. So in other words, although I can see this, that she didn't have the same effect on her scalp as you and I had by doing our doctorate.
Yeah, I still have my hair.
Uh-oh. There you go.
Well, Teacher Joanna, so yeah, it's Dr. Joanna. She finished her PhD. We're going to talk about that today, the journey of what it takes to do that type of work. Because, Joanna, you did it in a different pathway, and I think our listeners would love to hear this, because in one way, Johnny and I, guess what? We kind of followed the path. We taught for a few years. We dug in. We did, you know, some graduate work. We found a connection in understanding that, you know what, I think I want to teach in higher education. The only way to really teach in higher education is to finish that PhD, EdD, or as they call it, the terminal degree. And we did that. We got our jobs as professors, got our tenures, got our promotions, and we're still in it. But Teacher Joanna, you did this. You're not interested in becoming a professor.
No. Yeah, I do have a different path.
Okay, so we're going to, you know, Johnny, right? Did I kind of get your bio sort of okay?
Yeah, you got it right. I mean, I did it a little bit. Different steps. I swore I was never going to be a professor all the way until about a month before I defended my dissertation and had a job offer to be a professor. And so, you know, that came a little ways, maybe a decade or so after teaching for a while. So, but yeah, it's different pathway because, you know, we have a veteran educator with expertise who advocates for teacher perspectives and teacher excellence. In a very important and unique, and I'll say, I think under-listened to way. I think we have a lot to learn from both Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie, and to know that Teacher Joanna is Dr. Joanna now, and to have, you know, learned from her research over the years, and to have that formalized in a way where it's going to impact how much, you know, it's sad to say, some of those credentials are required for the kinds of people who turn their ears off to teacher expertise. So I'm excited about Teacher Joanna being Dr. Joanna, because obviously we learned and listened to Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie before, but now a whole lot of people whose ears are closed to these kinds of things may have ears open in a different way to consider these wonderful ways that we can all learn to be better educators in a different way than kind of that stereotype of, you know, be the teacher that's loud and energetic and sometimes isn't what works for everybody, especially for kids in our classrooms. You know, being a regulated adult in a room is really important, and I think is under-listened to in teacher education and in education. So to have someone who says, I've done it, I'm doing it, and I'm working with lots of different ways that people are doing that, both what we would consider formal research and, you know, in the trenches kinds of day-to-day ways that teachers have expertise. I'm excited about that. And I'm excited today for a special broadcast with Dr. Joanna.
Yeah.
Because, wow, like we learned so much from you, Dr. Joanna, but just also being able to learn from your doctoral studies and the research that you've been doing and you've been putting your heart and mind and hands into for so long. It's a gift to the education world. So listeners, you're going to get some of that today because Teacher Joanna, now Dr. Joanna, is going to share that wonderful stuff because we talk about regulation, but I am so pumped about the introduction of generative regulation theory. I mean, like I'd be geeking out to this before I even knew it was a dissertation and so much more to come. But listener, stay with us because this is exciting stuff. We're going to have Dr. Joanna, introduce generative regulation theory.
Yeah, yeah. But before that, Joanna, yeah. Here's the question. Seriously, I mean, you didn't need to do this. You didn't need it. You have, what, 30 years experience as a teacher, master's degree. You've been working in the, as Johnny says, in the trenches. You've created an incredible program that has just served so many students so well. And I imagine there's a teacher or, you know, a person out there who's going, oh, why did she do that? She didn't need to. And, you know, because we're going to talk about, you know, it wasn't easy to do that. But I mean, what was it that kind of you said, because is it because like Johnny kind of said, is this like, okay, you know, is it a credibility thing that you get with this? Or, you know, listener wants to know, Teacher Joanna, you could have just kept doing what you're doing, retired and sipped on those, you know, pina coladas.
Well, it was a natural progression for me. And though hearing your story too, Johnny, it's interesting. Like everyone does say, like, why are you doing this? Or why did you do this? And they expect it to be a linear path for me to say, I want to be a professor, I want to be a superintendent. And I can honestly say that I have continued to say, I'm not sure. I'm just following something that's natural and important to me. I don't know that it's, you know, overtly about credibility. I do really enjoy going to school. And so now I really am like, okay, am I going to go back again or is this it? So one, I do enjoy going to school, but then two, I guess my closest answer is I did really want to be able to contribute in a meaningful way to the field of education. Mm. And in particular to the ideas around regulation, which we'll talk more about. And by that, I mean nervous system regulation and youth wellness. And so it was just a natural progression, let's say, of my life's work and the observations I had made. And then when I did go exploring to find out, there's not much here in the field. And so I wanted to be able to open that up and contribute to other people or to other people's ideas where there are connections. And two, I also think that part of it is many of us who are in the field have this desire for this deep, meaningful work, and there is no place for it in our actual work.
Right.
Right. And so I think this is a place that many teachers are naturally at. They're curious, they're interested, they're conducting research, you know, and that's part of the thing is my research methodology was testimonial, which is from Latin American and Chicana scholarship, where it positions people's story and experience as credible knowledge sources. And so I know, standing along all my brothers and sisters and teaching, that there's people out, they don't have the formal doctorate, but they're working at this level. I just wish, of course, that this was part of our professional experience. And it's not. And it's not specifically for a teacher. I think a difference between myself and some people that I know who have gone this route is that as a teacher, I did pay for it myself, whereas administrators often get their continuing education paid for. So this was something that I did invest in.
Right.
But it was investing in myself and in my own well-being. There's times when I research about regulation, there is a part of it that, you know, like reading and research is a healthy form of disassociation. Anyway, I've learned that about myself.
My goodness, disassociation. That sounds like something I experience daily. Although, you know, yes, it's Dr. Teacher, always a teacher, Dr. Joanna from Educators Amplified. We are celebrating
this accomplishment, this hard work. Joanna, too, we're going to get more into, as Johnny said, the GRT, the, you know, the regulation theory. But I also want to ask you, though, too, or point out, in 2013, when you and I met, you had this desire. Let's talk a little bit more about that when we get back.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Wisconsin Elections Commission issued a highly critical report of the City of Madison's former clerk after investigating how 193 mail-in ballots were left uncounted after the 2024 general election. The clerk was suspended by the city, then subsequently resigned. November 12th, a staff member alerted City Clerk Mary Beth Witzel Bell that a sealed ballot courier bag had been found, but Witzel Bell allegedly gave the staff no instructions to open or otherwise investigate, did not alert state or county officials, and went on vacation the next day. Just before Thanksgiving, unaware that an unopened bag had been found, an elections inspector reported a discrepancy in wards 56 and 65. December 2nd, inspectors found another unopened courier bag containing 125 uncounted ballots. The 400-page report found several leadership and procedural failures. It concluded, quote, rather than acknowledge these significant errors, the city clerk and her staff either ignored the issue or willfully refused to inform the necessary parties and seek assistance. These actions resulted in nearly 200 lawful voters' votes going uncounted, an unconscionable result, unquote. The report orders the City of Madison to complete several procedural reforms before the next statewide election in February 2026. We've linked to the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Ooh, man, slow headbang there. Saturday, though, it's Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators, talking education, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, producer, chairman of the board, Jacob, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and yes, our incredible guest, Dr. Teacher Joanna, Educators Amplified. She's been on the show many times with her partner, Teacher Hallie, and we are celebrating this accomplishment of completing her doctorate. And Joanna, though, it's 2025. You and I met 2013, 2014. And I remember, too, we don't have to do the regulation story because you were like, what do you think about regulations? And I was like, they're horrible. I hate rules. You're like, no, not that, not that. But you and I talked at that time and you were saying, like, I've got this, you know, I teach the real school. I've got this great program. And in fact, I think you were already enrolled or had been enrolled in a PhD program at the UW, but you were kind of feeling like, I don't know. And you're like, Tim, what do you think? And I was like, well, you know, yeah. I mean, what are you doing it for? You know, do you want to become a professor? And you're like, no, I don't really want to do that. But I mean, how long before you and I had met were you thinking, were you, you know, working? Because you made a decision to not finish your doctorate at that time mm-hmm. and wait until what you've been doing this now for the last 3 years?
Yeah. Well, this last half was two.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, take us back quickly to 2013 when we met.
I will, because you are an important part of my story in terms of how this all did come together. I remember too meeting with you in 2013-ish and right showing you my materials just from my school. And you saying, this is a PhD. Is this a PhD? And I was like, well, no, I'm not. No, I'm in a program, but no, this isn't it. And you're like, oh my God, this is PhD worthy. So, you know, that you put in my head. And then you're right. In our conversations, though, you would say, why? I would just say I was always bouncing between what I call academia or advocacy. And so when I started at the UW, I was into the academia piece, right? And at the time, and wanted to continue, but I really wasn't comfortable in the program. It wasn't what, and that's not to bag UW. It just wasn't for me. And I'm old enough and wise enough, and even then, to be like, I don't like how this feels. And I felt like, too, there was so much needing to happen. I almost felt like I was sitting on the sidelines, sitting and writing papers. And it was after that that I started Educators Amplified. So I've always got to channel my energy somewhere. And so I was doing the academia and I was like, dude, this is not fulfilling. And then I went into advocacy, which meant really trying to almost be a community organizer for people here in the Metro Milwaukee area. And I was really trying to bridge our suburban districts with MPS, our largest urban district. Anyway, and so I went back and forth and then returned, you know, and then I think you get into advocacy and you're like, oh my God, there's all these things I'm wondering about and want to research. And then I'd go back to academia. And so then this round going to academia, too, it was really clear. When I first started, too, they'd be like, what do you want to do it on? And I felt like I was making stuff up. You know what I mean? Being like, what do I want to do it on? And it was like making up stuff. And
Your research question?
Right. Joanna? And it felt like really like faux and forced. But then when I went back this time, I was clear. Right. And I was like, oh, I know what I want to do. And I even think I kind of know how I want to do it. And I did have an excellent chair and she was so awesome and like complimenting and, you know, feeding into and putting me in connection with sources that kind of affirmed my work, but also made me more curious about things.
Johnny, I know you're sitting there here and going like, yeah, I you know, the academia versus advocacy, you know, I believe, you know, I was prepared for academia and I learned to advocate. My advocacy came after academia. And I can look back at my program and say, yeah, it was very traditional. Johnny, you know, as we're.
Mine was the opposite, Tim. I started a couple doctoral programs, University of Indiana, University of Toledo. I had teased the idea earlier in my teaching career and it didn't feel right. Similarly, I mean, it didn't feel like it was time for me to leave my classroom and learning in Detroit and being a teacher in the neighborhoods that I was working as an advocate in, you know. And so mine grew out of like sort of activism in education. And then I was at, you know, the blue collar scholar label comes honestly. I found a home in a program that, you know, was for community advocacy and education. It was an urban education program partnered with public health. So there were nursing educators, there were community organizers, there were teachers and school leaders, but it was really a program that I would say prepared for the traditional if you wanted that, but mostly was practitioner focused. And really about advocacy and change and action. So it was a unique program that I ended up being able to work in. And not many of those folks went on to traditional academia. And so I have a little bit of a different experience in my program.
Well, and so much going on there. Teacher, Dr. Joanna, you know, talking about this though too, and in your journey, I think too, for people to hear. I started here, it was over 10 years ago. I still had the bug. I found this, and then I jumped in. And when we get back, let's really explore what you jumped into and why, and then that GRT, busted pencils. Before we get back.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. The driver suspected of ramming a vehicle into a crowd outside of a Los Angeles nightclub, injuring dozens, is in custody now. Lillian Carranza at the LAPD.
He is in stable condition. However, he is not free to leave. He is in the custody of Los Angeles Police Department, and we're looking at charges such as attempt murder and assault with a deadly weapon at this point.
President Trump is suing the Wall Street Journal for $10 billion over a story linking him to convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. CBS's Dick Brennan.
A spokesperson for Dow Jones said they have full confidence in their reporting and they say they will vigorously defend against any lawsuit.
Two wildfires in Arizona have burned more than 90 square miles. KPHO-TV's Jack Prilutsky.
The Dragon Bravo fire has been very destructive. It's burned somewhere around 70 structures, including several historic cabins where a lot of park rangers live, where a lot of tourists camp out.
CBS News Brief, I'm Allison Keys.
Another win for Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers beat the Dodgers last night in L.A. 2-0. The Crew have now won 8 in a row. They remain a game behind the first-place Cubs, who beat the Red Sox 4-1 at Wrigley Field. The Brewers' Caleb Durbin with a big night for his first time in Dodger Stadium, an RBI double, and a solo home run shot in the 7th. Pitcher Quinn Priester, fans Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman to start the game on the way to 6 innings and 77 pitches with 10 strikeouts. The Brewers have now beat the Dodgers 4 in a row heading into tonight's game. Manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, we've played a bunch of close games against them. Things have went our way, so it helps you prepare a little bit because you're used to it. You know who's hot and who's not. You know who might be a tick off their game, and you might make a decision because, well, you know what? So-and-so's not swinging like he normally does, so we can attack him here differently.
That's the Brewers' Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. I love it when I hope rumors are true. According to the New York Post, there are rumblings that Fleetwood Mac will reunite. It's not just from the paparazzi, but rather from Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. They did a coordinated Instagram post sparking rumors. Nicks posted song lyrics from Frozen Love, and Buckingham completed them. The two famously dated and broke up, just like fellow band members Christine and John McVie. Breakups have served the band well, though, because the album they were making during said breakups was Rumors and was awesome. I'm a sucker for a good cop show. My favorite detective show in the last several years is probably Amazon Prime's Bosch. And I also like the spinoff Bosch Legacy. The show has produced yet another spinoff called Ballard, which is based on a character introduced in the last season of Bosch Legacy, Detective Renee Ballard. The detective elements of the show are great, but star Maggie Q lacks a certain charisma. Having said that, there is a lot going on, and the cold cases Ballard takes on are pretty cool. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy today, highs around 80 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, 56. Some sunshine for Sunday and highs in the upper 70s. Mostly sunny, upper 70s on your Monday. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday. Highs in the mid 80s, upper 80s Wednesday.
Currently, 78 degrees.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time after a massage, a chiropractor appointment, and some sleep. We'll be back with regular programming from Madison on Monday. Join us then.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Sounds like Thor's hammer, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. What made me think of that? I'm binging my favorite show, Vikings, again. Downloaded Netflix, and holy crap, I can watch every episode. Oh, not what we're talking about today, though. Teacher, doctor, doctor, teacher, Joanna, Educators Amplified is in the house. Talking about that journey that you've been on, and teacher Dr. Joanna, I what you were talking about though earlier, you say, you know, I started with the UW, right? And you're like, I'm not criticizing, you had said what happened there, but then you went someplace else, and I think people need to hear, like, okay, for me, when I hear you started at UW and it didn't. Because, you know, UW is a big R1 graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Johnny, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, to imagine that they were preparing you to be a scholar faculty member, that's what they do.
Yeah.
And that's not a negative, but that's, you know, I remember me, I was at the University of Maryland College Park, and I remember working with my advisor who was, you know, point blank, and University of Maryland College Park was an R1 research institution. And he was like, Tim, my job is to prepare you to become a researcher and a faculty member and be qualified to go and work in another research one institution.
Mm.
You know, it's like,
yeah, no, it was really important to me to still be a practitioner. You know, I'm a practitioner. That's when you say teacher, I equate that with practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I knew that. I mean, I one of the things I think I kind of do feel confident in myself is I can hold both spaces. I am both about theory and practice. Yes. And a lot of times people are either or. I know I'm both. Anyway, and so maybe that was part of it. I'm not sure. But definitely I didn't feel like I could be me. Mm. And I don't know, too, if that's just my career has been in alt ed. I'm an alt ed student through and through. Okay. And so that means I got to understand it in my way. I got to feel a real relationship. I've got to be able to work through my strengths. And maybe that was it, that's what it didn't like. I kept feeling like I had to force myself to be another way, to fit somebody else's standard. Mm. And so when I made the switch to Viterbo, which is where I had done my administrative certification, and it just had a different vibe. I remember because it was more that whole, like, we're about you. They have a mission around ethical leadership and service. That's like legit. And it seemed like they understood what I was talking about, to be quite honest. And so they weren't like, well, no, this is what we're talking about, so we need you to do it this way. They were like, oh my gosh, this is what you talk about? Oh, cool. You could do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it just felt, it was like coming home. And so, but that is it to anyone. And again, as a practitioner, that's something that I think is really important in teachers that I work with and mentor and with students who I've taught, right? Like, find your way, babies, and let's go. You don't have to be my way. My skill and strength is that I can hear you and I can help, you know, help you find your way. And so I feel like the institution I selected and ended up completing with, that is what they did. They heard me and helped me find my way.
Johnny.
Well, I love that. And big plug for Viterbo and the excellent work that's happening over there in Wisconsin. So, hey, listeners, you probably can check it out too. I mean, you don't have, you're preaching to the choir teacher, Dr. Joanna, because, you know, big fan of the Franciscans and no doubt that it would fit the kind of work you do and the spirit you embody with a commitment to poverty, humility, service, you know, and bringing, like you said, theory and practice to action. That praxis piece that is for everyone, especially the most vulnerable in our communities. So, you know, sometimes it's about the fit. In fact, I'd argue it's always about that fit. And it doesn't shock me. And so for our listeners to know that you would find home for your amazing work and perspective in schools to be supported, matched, and in good kind of resonance and harmony with a group of higher education folks who are committed in mission, right, to poverty, humility, and service. So theory comes to action in those kinds of spaces, in my experience. So big ups to, you know, to your experience in that. Tim, you know, I'm just chomping at the bit because I want
I know, go, dive, you I, go jump in, man. Now's the time.
So Dr. Joanna, this is, you know, like, I like how you say too, once a teacher, always a teacher. That never goes away, right? But we've heard about the work that Educators Amplify has done, that you've been doing, you and Teacher Hallie and so many other folks around centered education, right? And around regulation. And, you know, I think this movement through your work to introduce generative regulation theory, I mean, can we get into it, Tim? Can we go there?
Let's do
it. Theory and the practice. Introduce our listeners, right, to regulation-centered theory of education.
Cool. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. And I want to start out in by saying maybe two things first. And one is that, yes, I had a really successful run in designing and operating this school that focused on regulation and well-being. But this research was actually not about that. So a lot of people would assume like, well, what's the recipe and how do we do it? And I backed it up with my research was more about, it was titled Shifting the Schema of Schooling. Mm-hmm. And what allowed, I wanted to find out like what I had suspected that there was a shift, meaning that these students, these educators believed that education served a different purpose in this school than a traditional high school that really only talked about credits and graduation. They'd talk about credits, graduation, and maybe some extracurriculars. Like that was how it was kind of overall being defined. And I was like, oh, we were able to shift the schema of schooling and have people open to that it can look and function in a different way. Or I was like, I felt that. Was that really what happened? And so my research really focused on the experience of individuals, both students and staff, who, like I said, experienced a different education model, a model that that was focused on what I call a regulation-centered education. And by regulation-centered education, I mean that our foundation was creating nervous system regulation. And that can sound, I don't know if that sounds frou-frou, weird, whatever, but it's literally the bottom line of all of our connection. That if our nervous system and if our regulation, if we're out of balance, we're really not connecting relationally or, you know, cognitively. And so looking at it as though that we assume regulation in schooling and this idea that we could be responsible for generating it. But maybe sometimes, even though I do like to talk about like the what I desire versus what I'd like to, you know, dismantle in a way. but I think that it is also, though, important to just say, and the premise is that we are not having success as an institution with meeting our current context is what I call it. And I saw this really drastically change after COVID. Like, there had been signs and there had been a big maybe like drop off in terms of what I was noticing in student health and engagement, quite honestly, back with No Child Left Behind and the introduction and mandating of a lot of standardized programs and technology. And there's many different factors, but overall, what I'm saying is we're really not meeting the moment in terms of people feeling of schools contributing to wellness. Mm. It's either like you're either well when you get there or not, you know, and if you're not, then we'll come up with all kinds of like programs and ideas and little side plans to maybe help you get well. But there's not a focus on how can we be sure that the institution that the children and the adults are in is actually contributing to their health and well-being. And so generative regulation theory is pretty self-explanatory in terms of that, the words. It's this theory that we can generate regulation and that that's the foundation of education. Mm-hmm. That we generate that everything that occurs when you interact with the school is going to be done through a restorative approach, let's say, that generates regulation instead of further contributing to dysregulation.
Let me jump in there real quick, Joanna, because what you're saying, because you've said it to me in this way many times. Our kids come in so many ways to school in different states of being in their mind. And schooling says, get ready, get straight, because you need to fit into this box today. You're saying, hey, wait a minute. First of all, the box is a whole problem in and of itself. And we need to start by helping students find an ability to get themselves regulated, because then we can explore what it means to learn when they're regulated. Am I doing okay?
Yeah. I mean, so, but that's what people struggle with is you have to first acknowledge that most of what our current schema is first of all, from an outdated understanding of how our brains work and child development. And so most of our current schema is built on compliance and force and fear in a way. You know, like it's always like, how do we make, I even have a voice I'll use where everything will be like, how do we make them? Like if parents don't come to conferences, how do we make them? If kids won't read, how are we going to make them? You know, and there's just this whole, our schema is very top down power over. And so, yeah, I'm saying that we can shift, or we need to, first of all, use the information now available to us. There is very good and clear information in the field of neuroscience about how brains and bodies work and how learning occurs and learning occurs in connection, and it just does. And so we live in a world that I'm going to straight up say, I think because of the world we live in, we all experience low grade chronic stress. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going into an environment that is specifically its purpose is for our learning or our healthy development, then we have to consider regulation.
Wow. Okay. We're typically too. Yeah. It's like Tim and Johnny are going to come back and break this down. No, we're not. We got a little bit more time with teacher Dr. Joanna. We want to keep her, yeah, for that last segment because there's more to go there. Johnny's writing some great comments in there. Love this, Joanna. It's such wonderful and clear work. That's what Johnny wrote in our little inside chat. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Teacher Dr. Joanna, one more time when we get back.
Building and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Veterans, have you explored your benefits lately? The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs stands ready to serve Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. With our partners, like your local county veteran service officer, we can help access the benefits you've earned and the support you need. For more information, please visit WISVETS.com. That's WISVETS.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, with funding provided by the Milwaukee Brewers and the Brewers Community Foundation.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I imagine we'll talk about Superman. It's the same thing I said about F1. It's a great video. The music is great. The action's great. The CGI is great. I don't feel like they had to really develop the characters. It was fine.
I thought they did a really good job of showing Superman's, you know, humility.
I agree with you there. One of my positives, it wasn't 2 hours and 40 minutes like every other blockbuster movie this summer, but lots to like there.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Ah, there it is. Yep. One more time, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and teacher Dr. Joanna from Educators Amplified. GRT, that's what we're, you know, love that. Not chat GPT, it's teacher Dr. Joanna, GRT. Teacher Dr. Joanna. Man, we wanted to keep you on for a little bit longer just so you can continue. Well, as you said during the, you know, people want to know about this because I think what you put forward here is this kind of sense, you call it a schema, and for other people, it's like, what? It's like the way things are is because people assume that it should be this way, which is compliance. You know, to me, it's forced compliance and it doesn't fit with who kids are. And I like where you were going right before the break. It actually probably doesn't really fit well with anybody right now because of chronic stress.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of this research, you know, was with adults saying that when we have models that are intentional about generating regulation, it's a positive for everybody. It's generative, the opposite of that is depleting. Mm. That, right? We are seeing the profession depleted right now. Because of the way that the work is structured and how what people are being asked to do, it's depleting. But this is generative. And we could also say that the issues with chronic absences and disengagement is also evidence of depletion. And so, yeah, I just know that there can be another way and that it doesn't cost $1 million. You don't need an army of clinicians. These are things that are actually completely possible with what is already there, with the students you currently have, with the staff you currently have. It's just shifting the schema to be like, okay, what if our main focus to start is wellness? What if we're making sure that we're, that when you walk in the door, that the environment is supporting your wellness, that the adults and the people who work there that you interact with are supporting your wellness, and that the policies and practices that the institution, you know, overarches the institution, that they support wellness. And so what do I mean by that? It can be as small as taking stock of how people enter the building, to as large as what is your suspension policy, or what kind of practices are used to communicate with families? Are we only reaching out to like report and like talk about what's wrong? Or do we have ways of engaging families that are, again, supportive of their regulation? And again, maybe right now I can sound like, I don't know, like maybe not concrete enough, but this is all rooted in my direct experience that when we designed a model where we were like, regulation is the goal, and then we aligned everything with that, what we found and what the research then found, and my subjects ranged in age from people who had just graduated who were like 18 years old to my long-term sub who was 72 years old, what we found was that, yes, this generated regulation, it had a, we called a framework of embedded, enacted, and embodied, that when there was an embedded philosophy that made sense all across the board, and then it was enacted through practices that supported that, then it became embodied in them. So an example I can give is like traditional school will be like, you know, turn in your homework because that's the right thing to do. But then when you don't turn in your homework, what comes back isn't necessarily the right thing to do. What comes back is like threats, reporting out to your parents, taking things away, exclusionary methods. And so that doesn't really support someone moving forward. And so when it's, when there's a clear philosophy and it's embedded in all things, when it's enacted, it then becomes embodied. And this is something that the students and the teachers who were a part of this model, they still, what I call, live the way. They feel it and they can speak about how this is a part of their lives.
Man, you're coming back, teacher, Dr. Joanna. I feel like instead of a, what we're going to do, it should be a moment of Dr. Joanna. But hey, it's time for your moment of Zen. We don't all have to do heroic things. All we have to do is little things. And at a certain points in history, millions of little things come together and change takes place.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast with one of our most esteemed guests, Dr. Joanna. And if you want to grab more Busted Pencils podcasts, well, just head on over to Apple, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. And you can always find us on civicmedia.com or on our website, bustedpencils.com. And remember, you can always get great Busted Pencils content like today's broadcast every Monday for Homeroom, Wednesdays for Class in Session, and on Fridays for Producer Jacob's Choice. And of course, Pencil Busters,
You can always tune in next Saturday and listen to the Busted Pencils Weekend Broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busted pencils.
Listening to Bull Falls Radio,
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keys. Police in Los Angeles say that driver who rammed a vehicle into a crowd of people in line to get into a nightclub is in custody now. Seven people are in critical condition and dozens were injured. Police say bystanders attacked the driver and he was found to have a gunshot wound. Lillian Carranza with the LAPD.
He is in stable condition. However, he is not free to leave. He is in the custody of Los Angeles Police Department and we're looking at charges such as attempt murder and assault with a deadly weapon. This point.
Wildfires in Arizona have burned more than 90 square miles. They are being fanned by high winds that have burned historic structures, including a century-old lodge in the Grand Canyon. KPHO-TV's Zach Frulutsky reports.
It rained earlier this week, which I think helped on both of these fires, but now, you know, we are in Arizona in the middle of July. It's going to get hot. It's going to get dry.